Well, I bet you've discovered by now that life isn't fair. People don't play fair, and even the ones that play by the rules don't always seem to play by the same rule book that you and I got. I bet you remember 15 years ago, it was the month of October 15 years ago, when the jury found O.J. Simpson not guilty of double murder in the deaths of Nicole and Ronald Goldman. You may recall that the very next year, this same case came up in civil court, in which the Goldman and Brown families sought $33.5 million in damages in the wrongful deaths of Nicole and Ronald. And interestingly, the jury did find in favor in the second case, but not the first case, and awarded the Goldman and Brown families $33.5 million. According to the Goldman family, not a penny of that has ever been paid. And to this day, at age 72, OJ is a free man playing golf. Now, for many people, they would say that Mr. Simpson got away with murder. And you know, we live in a world where it does seem injustice rules from time to time, and it may even seem like people get away with murder. But these big, high-profile cases of injustice are not really what's on my mind today. I'm aware of the fact that everybody in this room from time to time suffers injustice, suffers disappointment. It might be the government telling you, but even though you've had the sign there for 17 years, we want you to take it down. It might be that your kid showed up for the soccer team tryouts and he outshined most of the people on the field, and yet the coach still didn't have a place for him on the team. And it might mean that the boss passed over you for a promotion for another time in order to reward somebody else who was loosely related to his second cousin. This kind of stuff still happens. We still suffer injustice. Well, how are we supposed to respond when life is not fair? When we're the recipients of injustice? Well, I believe James chapter 5, verses 7 to 12, give us God's answer for the Christian response when we're suffering injustice or when life is not fair. Now, let me remind you that just a week ago we talked about verses 1 through 6, and it was about the rich who oppress you. It's about the rich who won't pay you. We go into their fields and the workers cry out because you withheld their pay. Mistreatment. And in the light of that, James responds now to the brethren, and he tells them, this is how I want you to respond. Let's read the text, James chapter 5, that's where I am, verse number 7. Follow along in your Bible, please. It says, be patient, therefore, brethren, unto the coming of the Lord. Behold, the husbandman or farmer waiteth for the precious fruit of the earth, and hath long patience for it until he receive the early and latter rain. Be ye also patient, establish your hearts, for the coming of the Lord draweth nigh. Grudge not against one another, brethren, lest ye be condemned. Behold, the judge standeth before the door. Take my brethren, the prophets, who have spoken in the name of the Lord, for an example of suffering and affliction and of patience. Behold, we count them happy which endure. Ye have heard of the patience of Job, and have seen the end of the Lord, that the Lord is very pitiful and of tender mercy. But above all things, my brethren, swear not, neither by heaven, neither by the earth, neither by any other oath, but let your yea be yea and your nay, nay, lest you fall into condemnation. So when I'm suffering injustice, something that James says here is supposed to help me when life is not fair. I want to break the message down into 2 points. They both revolve around the key theme of the text, which is patience. Now, if there's something I'd like to preach on, this is not my favorite subject. This is a personal weakness and something I have to pray for. You know, and someone has said, you know, you shouldn't pray for patience, you know, because God will send you trials to make. So I've prayed for patience, and this is what I get. And you've been there, all right? Well, how are we supposed to respond, all right? Let's look at 2 points today. The first one is this, his plea for patience in us. Look back at your text. This comes right out of the Bible. Verse 7, be patient, therefore, brethren. Look at verse 8, be also patient. It's the same command. It's in both places. And it isn't the only occurrence of the word patience. It's the only occurrence of this particular Greek word. These two verses back to back are imperatives. Be patient. But we also find the word patience in that latter part of verse number 7. We find the word patience again in the end of verse number 10. And in verse number 11, we encounter the word endure. You're getting patient, endure. You're getting that puff of the P to remind you he's talking about patience. So when we're under pressure, when the heat turns up, I want to tell you the last thing that we're thinking about is being patient. I'll tell you what we're thinking about. Let's get out of Dodge. Let's find a loophole. I want to quit. I don't want to be here anymore. I'm tired of this. I'm moving out. And as a Christian, we're deliberately and repeatedly told in Scripture, don't respond that way. Do not leave. We are to be patient. Boy, I could give a number of examples. Let me tell you some verses that convict me, all right? Here's one. Psalm 27, verse 14. Wait on the Lord, be of good courage, he shall strengthen thine heart. Wait, I say, on the Lord. I have to quote that verse to myself to remind me what I'm supposed to be doing. Here's another one from another familiar psalm, Psalm 37, verse number 7. Rest in the Lord and wait patiently for him. Fret not thyself because of him who prospers in his way, because of the man who bringeth wicked devices to pass. The Hebrew of Psalm number 40 and verse 1 means, in waiting I waited for the Lord. And he inclined unto me and heard my voice, brought me up also out of an horrible pit. But the Hebrew behind that is wait on the Lord. That is not something we like to do. What does it mean to wait? Well, the particular word that's used as an imperative in verses 7 and 8 means to be of a long spirit or not to lose heart. In fact, most of the time in the New Testament is translated long suffering, to suffer long with something, and particularly has to do with people as opposed to circumstances. Another word, which we find in 11, has more to do with circumstances, but this one, more with people. It's putting up with people and not responding even when we've been wronged. And James has laid out a case in the first six verses of this chapter that they had been wrong. The rich had been oppressing them, had been mistreating them, and they felt like they ought to have some say. I mean, if you were living through what some of these people were living through in James's day, you know what we'd be saying to each other as healthy Americans? Let's organize. Let's stage a protest. Let's form a union, and if necessary, a militia. We're going to take out these rascals. But James does not ask us to do that. Instead, he tells us to be patient. Now, he's not saying grin and bear it. He's talking about a patience that has expectation. So I want you to put beside your notes, if you're note-taking, patience with expectation. It isn't groan, I'm going to have to endure this. It's, I could just be patient for a few more days, this is all going to work out. It's the expectation that makes the patience tolerable. Now you see this right in their text. Verse number 7, he says, be patient for the coming of the Lord. Again in verse number 8, for the coming of the Lord draweth near. I endure, I persevere, I hang in there, not because it's easy, but because it's temporary. Whatever I'm going through, whatever person I'm dealing with, as a Christian, I know whatever I'm facing, it's temporary. As someone has formerly said, you know, and it came to pass. For the Christian, that's always true. Whatever comes will pass. As a believer, we believe the best is yet to come. Somebody reminds me that in emails regularly, right, Tammy? All right. 2 Corinthians chapter number 4. Where am I? Give me another slide here. What it means to wait until the coming. Give me the 2 Corinthians verse. There we go. Verse 17. 1 Corinthians, rather, 4:17. For our light affliction, which is but for a moment. Remember, see what Paul's doing? Same thing as James. Affliction or suffering is temporary. Worketh for us a far more exceeding eternal weight of glory, while we look not at the things which are seen, but at the things which are not seen. For the things which are seen are temporal, temporary. But the things which are not seen are eternal. To make his point, James uses stories. He's a good preacher. He likes to use stories just like me, all right? So he talks about a farmer. Now, according to one church father, Clement, who lived in AD 150, he said that James and Jude were farmers by trade. that's the church tradition. I can't prove it. That might be. But at any rate, he just talked about farming back up in verses 2 and 3 when he talked about these laborers who were working in the fields and they weren't getting paid by the rich, were being oppressed. So he's just talked about farming and many illustrations in the Bible about farming because that was part of daily life. So he took farming and he says, no, you think about this. A farmer goes out, he sows his field and he has to wait. Every farmer has to wait a period of several months, 3 to 4 months usually, before the crop grows. And when he puts his crop in the ground, he's very dependent on natural resources, the sun to shine the right amount during the day and the rain to come. And here he specifically mentions the early and latter rains. To us, that doesn't mean a whole lot, but after you get the seed in the ground, you need water to germinate the seed so it will grow. And right before harvest, it's good to have another rain to kind of fatten or swell up the produce before it's reaped. But this was especially true in Israel, a desert-like climate, not much different from ours. And they would farm in the winter, what we would call our winter, between late October, early November, into April and May. So their growing season was different from ours. But they relied on the rains that would come early, October, November, and the latter rains, which would come in April and May, so that they would be able to turn out a good crop. In fact, in blessing, pronouncing blessing in the Old Testament, God said, if you'll be faithful to me in the book of Deuteronomy, I will give you the early and the latter rains. Now, how many of you read that before and probably just thought, what in the world does that mean? All right? Well, you need rain when the crop's in the ground, when it first goes in the ground, and you need it some more right before you harvest it. And God promised to do that for his people. Now, the important connection between the farmer and you as a person who's being patient is that farmers plant with what? Remember what word I told you to put beside patience? Expectation. The farmer is not just planting and waiting. He's waiting with expectation. I expect, with the favor of God in heaven, that I am going to get a crop to be able to feed my family and to sell and to make money for my family. So he's waiting with expectation. This is exactly the nature of the waiting that God wants you to have. For the coming of the Lord draweth nigh. This is Bible waiting. It's waiting with expectation or anticipation. So what are we anticipating? What are we waiting for? Letter B. Well, it's obvious, I've already demonstrated verses 7 and 8, for the coming of the Lord. This is why I'm waiting. I'm waiting for the coming of the Lord. It's almost, the way James lays it out here, it's almost as if the judge is standing at the door, that Jesus is at the threshold of heaven. We see this. The Lord draweth nigh. He's right on the threshold of heaven, about to burst forth and to come into this world. All he needs is a signal from the Father. So that being the case, waiting is not unreasonable. I don't have time really to develop this. This is just an additional thought. But James is anticipating what we call the imminency of the return of Christ. Now this is doctrine or teaching, but don't be buried under this. Imminency just means any moment Christ could appear. There is nothing that needs to happen before Jesus comes back. And in the first century, you read most of the writers of the epistles, they are anticipating that at any moment Jesus is going to appear. They really think it's going to happen in their generation. Certainly before the end of the first century. Now, it didn't happen. And the tendency with us is now that 19 centuries have passed and we're in the 21st... 20 centuries have passed and we're in the 21st century is to kind of go to sleep on this, that Jesus is not really going to come back anytime soon. Remember we just sang that song, maybe morning, maybe noon, maybe evening, and maybe soon. Maybe. No, I mean the first century church is like, he's going to come. All you need to do is just hang on a little bit longer, and then he's going to be here. So they're waiting with, what's the word? Expectation. He's going to be here at any moment. moment. So I need to be ready, and I need to be patient, and I can wait just a little bit longer. I mean, after all, it could be just this afternoon, or it could be before I wake tomorrow morning, that the clouds roll up and Jesus appears and takes me back. Certainly, I can wait another day. Well, I don't like what I'm going through. It's too difficult. The pain is too much. I can't endure anymore. And James is saying, no, listen, you can wait. Because for the Christian, Jesus is at the door. He is almost here. Hang in there. When he comes, he's going to judge the nations and all those that oppress us. Acts chapter 17, verse 31. The Bible says, he hath appointed a day in which he will judge the world in righteousness by that man whom he hath ordained. And when Jesus comes back, he'll settle the score. He'll make it right. So God hasn't appointed me to be the judge. Jesus is the judge. And I can wait for him to show up and tackle the rich or anybody else who's oppressing me. You know, God doesn't need our help to judge. We often think we need to help our boss out. He needs to learn a lesson that this is not the way he treats people. This is the way we think. I know, because this is the way I think, and I know my brain just works just like yours. All right? We need to help people out. You know, that government person that sits behind the desk and won't process my paperwork and thinks it's funny. You know, I need to give her a piece of my mind. And this verse is saying, no, be patient. Injustice. Remember, the judge is at the door. He is about to come, and he will settle the score. Let him handle your problem. You know, there was a city. There is a city to this day on the northeastern corner of the island of Sicily. The city's name is Messina, Italy. It's a beautiful city. Back in 1908, December 28th, there was a significant earthquake to strike the city. In fact, it is ranked in the 10 worst destructive earthquakes in our history. 84,000 people in that city died 3 days after Christmas. Whew. Terrible tragedy. Earlier that month, the city had published a series of violent resolutions against any religious practice, against all religious principles. And the local journal in the town called Il Telefono published a parody in its Christmas edition, daring the Almighty to strike them with an earthquake. And 3 days later, the earthquake came. So God doesn't need my help to settle the score. He holds the earth in his palm, the wind in his fist, and the floods at his feet. I just need to get out of the way and be patient. When he shows up, it'll all be well. Wow. Patience with expectation. My judge is about to come and make things right. So when life isn't fair, I'm supposed to hang in there and wait for God. Well, number two, let's consider the pitfalls of patience, because he continues the theme in verse number 9, verses 9 through 12. He's still talking about patience. I know that in verse 10 he mentions patience. In verse number 11 he mentions enduring. But he shifts a little bit in his patience to talk about what I'm going to call are pitfalls. When you're waiting, there are common pitfalls that we all face. Waiting is difficult. It's not easy, especially if you're trying to wait the right way and wait on God. So let's talk about some common pitfalls. First one, grudge not. That's an odd word. It simply means to sigh or to groan. I'm going to choose instead to use the word grumble. Grumble. Don't grumble. Verse number 9. Grudge not or grumble not one against another, brethren, lest ye be condemned. Behold, the judge standeth before the door. It suggests an under the breath sighing or grumbling. 20 years ago, I was home to visit my parents for the Christmas break. And I was teaching school at the time, so I had about a 2.5-3 week break, and I spent about 2.5 weeks of that time home with my family in Pennsylvania. And then it was time to go home, and for back to my job in California, and that required an airplane flight, so the day started early, and my dad drove me to the Pittsburgh airport, which is over three hours west of my home. All right, that's the closest major airport. Ask my wife, I live in the middle of nowhere. I mean, I grew up in the middle of nowhere, not now. So it was a long way. So I went, and I checked my bags, and it was back before the days of 9/11, so my dad accompanied me to the waiting area. Remember those days when your family could go, and they could hug you and kiss you 10 times, and then again before you get on the plane? Remember those days? So that was the time this happened. And so we were waiting and waiting, and it was about 10 minutes before, really, that or just about boarding time, and I'm thinking, man, they haven't called for us to board yet. And I just mentioned something, and it's 15 minutes or so. We should be getting on the plane so there's time to get us and get out. Message over the intercom. One of the ladies up at the counter, attendants, takes the intercom and goes, those of you reporting for flight, blah, 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 we just want you to know that there's been a mechanical problem with your plane and it's right now being fixed and it's going to delay our takeoff slightly. We'll keep you posted. Kurt. So there we were, sitting in the airport, you know, and it went on for, we waited for about another hour, and then it was another message over the intercom again, this time. Well, they're still working on it, they haven't been able to resolve the issue, and I'm thinking, well, you know, at least they're trying to resolve the issue before they try to send a bunch of people on the plane. I am kind of relaxed about the whole thing, and I didn't have to report for work the next day, so I really wasn't very anxious about it, I just was waiting. Well, this went on for about 5 hours. And one of the customers, passengers to be on the plane, he began to get vocal, catcalling and stating his irritation loudly enough that everybody in the waiting area could hear it. So the attendants invited passenger so-and-so, would you please come to the desk? And I'm sure they're all trained in how to calm people down and relax. It started to escalate at the counter. I'm like, I cannot believe this guy. He is like way over the top. They call security and they haul this guy away. And he's like, oh yeah, call security. That's fine. I can tell them what I think of this airline too. You know, and so they're ushering him as he's stating things and they take him away to a part of the airport I've never seen. We get that because waiting we have to wait at the doctor's office and we have to wait at the DMV and we have to wait at the grocery line to check out. But when the time gets longer and longer and longer, we have a hard time waiting without grumbling. The story did resolve. After 7 hours, they did have all the passengers on the plane, and we did end up making the destination safely. I lived to tell about it. You get it, right? Grumbling. Now, this guy was vocal, verbal, outspoken. Everybody knew what he was thinking because it was right there out on his sleeves. Some of us are a little bit more discreet with our rebellion. I cannot believe this. And so this is really the word that's being grudged not. You're carrying animosity in your heart to the circumstances of the people involved. Grudge not, he says. Don't be moaning, complaining, grumbling while waiting. You know, for any of us to do that, we're going to need grace from God. Now, why do I want to not grumble? He says in the end of verse number 9, the judge stands before the door. It's almost as if Jesus is standing right on the threshold and he's just waiting for the cue or the gun to fire so he can sprint down here and get us. And the last thing you want to do is be on the wrong side of the judge when he shows up. So do not grumble. Don't get in that position. Be patient with expectation. The judge is at the door. He's going to be here before you know it. Now how can anyone endure such long waiting without grumbling? Well, he gives us some illustrations. Verse number 10, take my brethren, He's talking to the Christians now. Take the prophets who've spoken in the name of the Lord. Oh, you remember the prophets in the Old Testament? You remember? They were popular guys, right? They preached and everybody, crowds swarmed in to hear them, right? And they were loved and they got good church offerings. And I speak as a fool because I am being foolish. The prophets were not liked. What did they do to Jeremiah? They put him down in a pit. What did they do to Elijah? He had to run for his life for 3.5 years. He's living under the stars and wherever he can find a place, fed by ravens. He's hated by Ahab. If Ahab finds him, it's... Yeah, that's what they did to the prophets. And you remember their affliction and their suffering? And you remember their patience? James, in fact, is going to mention Elijah later in this chapter when he says, and he prayed for three, and it did not rain for a space of three, and he prayed again and it rained. Patience. Remember these heroes of our faith? Remember they were patient. You need to respond the same one. Why are these important? These remind us, these prophets remind us you're not the only one to have to wait. Other people have had to wait. You're standing in a long line of waiters. Which reminds me of a funny story I read while preparing this. This isn't in the notes. This is just for fun, all right? So do you ever notice when you go out to eat? Some of you are going to do that later today. And you're going to go, and you're going to wait to be seated. Then when you get a seat, you're going to wait for the waitress to bring your menus. And then after you get your menus and you pick something, you're going to wait for her to come back to take your order. Then she's going to take your order, and you're going to have to wait for them to make the food and wait for it to be redelivered to your table. And then the guy who's serving you has the audacity to call himself the waiter. Yeah, all of life is waiting, but as a Christian, I wait with expectation. Like the prophets of old, I'm not the only one who's had to wait. Well, then he gives another example. Hey, and take a Job, verse number 11. Behold, we count them happy which endure, which remain, who are patient. We have heard of the patience of Job and have seen the end of the Lord. The key phrase with Job is seeing the end of the Lord. Job was far from perfect. Even if you look back at his example in the Old Testament, you can find where he was kind of grumbling a little bit. God, why is this happening? I don't get this. I need my day in court. Job 23. But Job isn't being pointed to as an example of perfection. He's being pointed to as an example of patience. And what did God do with his patience? Rewarded it in the end. In the end, Job had twice as much favor as he did at the beginning. He had twice as much cattle, twice as many camels, twice as many donkeys, and he had a new set of kids. Poor woman. 10 more kids. So you got to think of the end. Remember, Job waited, God rewarded. If you wait, the implication is God will reward you. You have seen the end of Job. You have read Job 42. You have seen God give him back all his favor and all of his goods and his family. And God will do the same for you if you'll wait. So consider Job and remember, you will be blessed in the end. Now, if you're into your favorite drama or your favorite movie and the credits, the end credits come up and it says, the end, that is the last thing you want to see. Because you've enjoyed the experience. You have enjoyed the moment. You don't want it to end. But as a Christian, that is what I'm anticipating. I'm anticipating the end of all this. That's my patience with, key word today, expectation. Hey, when it ends, when the final credits roll and Jesus comes out of heaven, it's all going to be well. It's going to be fine. And I'm going to win. I am going to be rewarded. And it's going to be all right. So if he wants me to go another 30 days or even another 30 years, I can endure because I know it's not the end. And when the end comes, it'll all be well. You see, I see the patience of the Lord and I have seen the end of the Lord and what he does. I know it's going to be okay in the end. I'll wait today and I'll wait one more day. Well, I'm tired of waiting. I can wait one more day for Jesus. Can I? Can you? Some of you might just need to tell yourself, I'm going to, Lord, this is about all I can bear. I can wait one more day for Jesus. That's why we need to live. Waiting with expectation. So when life isn't fair, hang in there. Our judge is about to come. One of the pitfalls then, when I'm waiting, is to grumble or to complain. Verse 12 gives us another. I'm almost through. Many people read verse 12. Even some of my friends on the shelf read it as kind of like a hanging chad, a new idea, something different in the text. As almost as if James had something else to interject and this was the place to put it. I don't think so. Let me show you why. First of all, he uses a connective, which is obvious in the original. We don't see it. We just have the word but in verse number 12. But it is a connective word that links it. We call these, elementary, junior high, we call these coordinating conjunctions because they're linking something. So the word but is there. But something else. Notice this in verse number 9. You can follow it. You can see it yourself. We're told, grudge not or grumble not. And after some words, we're told, lest you be condemned. Now, go down to verse 12. You'll see it for yourself. In verse number 12, it starts by telling us, swear not. Then after several words, lest you fall into condemnation. It's the same pattern. Do you see it? Don't do this because you're going to be condemned. It's in both verses. You see it? Isn't that awesome? It links the two verses together. This is not a new idea. This is a continuation of the thought. Another pitfall that people get into when they're waiting is swearing. Now we think when we say swearing, we're thinking of those four-letter words that we're not supposed to know, but somehow they keep coming up in the movies we watch or something like that. And they slip out. This is not the swearing that James has in mind. I don't even know if James was aware of those. Probably, certainly not the same words that we use. And that's not what he means. The word in the original means making an oath that involves God's name. Making an oath that involves God's name. So if you really want to say, you know, make a point and put some gravity to your words, you're going to throw in the name of God or the name of the temple or the gold that's in the temple to kind of really say, man, I really mean business. Why? Do you not mean business the other 365 days of the year? And that's James' point. And that's Jesus' point. You might remember this in Matthew chapter number 5 in the Sermon on the Mount. Jesus dealt with the same issue. Again, he said, you've heard that it hath been said of them of old time, thou shalt not forswear thyself, but thou shalt perform unto the Lord thine oaths. But I, Jesus says, I say unto you, swear not at all, neither by heaven, for it's God's throne, neither by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great earth, for it is his footstool, neither by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king, neither shalt thou swear by thy head, because thou canst not make one hair white or black. Jesus is dealing with the same thing that James is trying to do. Don't try to add weight to your words by adding God's name or something else related to God. Instead, he says in verse 37, let your communication or words be yea, yea, nay, nay. Now, that doesn't mean that's the only word you can say is yes or no. He's saying, let it just be clear. Be a truthful person of integrity. When you speak, people know you're talking the truth, telling the truth. For whatever is more than these cometh of evil. James is echoing that thought in this passage and saying, be a truthful person. Do people who are suffering have a tendency to embellish their suffering? Oh, let me tell you, sister, it's about all I can bear. Really? We do that. We embellish our suffering. But particularly James is concerned about the oaths that we swear to get people to feel sympathetic for us. And we violate the third commandment, which says, thou shalt not take the name of the Lord thy God in vain. Exodus 20 and verse number 7. Thou shalt not take the name of the Lord thy God in vain. Let me give the slide that says swearing. Yeah, that's the one I want. All right? Let me give you some examples of how we do this today. We may not say it just like the Jews, but we throw God's name around like a football and we don't even realize it. Here goes. You ready? You're not going to like this, but we do it. All right? Good Lord, why is this happening to me? And let me just say, I'm giving these examples not to be irreverent at all, but to demonstrate that we're guilty of doing this. Heaven, have mercy. Swear not at all, neither by heaven, for it is God's throne, nor by earth, for it is His footstool. Oh, as God is my witness, this is the gospel truth. And what, the rest of the time you talk, it's not the gospel truth? What am I supposed to believe about this? My God, I cannot take it anymore. It is so bad, sister. I'm just not going to be able to make it. Oh, if you only knew what it was like to live with this guy. Boy, I can't take it anymore. Really? Can't you wait with expectation? The judge who'll settle the score is at the threshold. And when he comes, he'll make it right. Lord knows, these are the worst people I have ever had to deal with. What have all these people done? They have violated the third commandment. Just like Jesus and James demonstrated. And you've said things like this, haven't you? So now I'm going to meddling. And if you've done this, you're really violating the third commandment. What you should be known for is tell the truth. Tell the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth, all the time, and you don't need God's name to help you out. So when you're suffering, watch your words. There is a tendency to grumble. And there is a tendency in all of us to complain and to swear oaths against the Lord. One more note, and I'm through. Some have taken James' rebuttal here, or commandment, don't swear, as a reason that in a court of law, they cannot take an oath. They'll refuse. But if you understand what James is saying here, he really is saying you ought to always be known for the truth, whether you use God's name or not. So I don't know that I'd get all funny about it in a courtroom and cause the jury or the rest of the people in the court to wonder, well, you know, I don't take oaths. Well, what's the person? What are those people in the courtroom going to think? Well, is he going to tell me the truth or not? You should, as a Christian, you ought never to leave any doubt that you're speaking the truth. And when you're called to give an oath in court, do you solemnly swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth? And usually, though this is being replaced in some courtrooms, usually it was, so help me God. You are not actually saying the oath. All you're promising is, I do promise to speak the truth. And you usually say, I will or I do. And that's over. To me, I think that is within the spirit of what James is telling. You don't want to cause people to doubt that you're going to tell the truth. I want them to know, as a Christian, always tell the truth. So I don't see a problem. Some Christians get hung up there. I think they're just not aware of what's really happening in the text. The issue is truthfulness all the time. Life is not fair, but hang in there. The judge is about to come. God's about to show up on the scene. All right, let me tell you a final story. And I hope you get the final point. So a Scotsman by the name of MacDonald and another Scottish chaplain bailed out during World War II from an airplane over Germany, and they were captured and sent to a POW camp in Germany. The nature of the camp was they split the nationalities up, and for some reason they put MacDonald, though he was Scottish, with the Americans, and they put the chaplain with the Brits on separate sides of the fence in different holding areas. On the American side, the Americans had been able to manufacture in the camp a little homemade radio, and so they were getting daily updates of the progress of the war. And so MacDonald would carry that information. He'd go over to the fence and he'd call to his friend, the chaplain, and they would speak in the old Gaelic tongue, indecipherable to the Germans. So that one little homemade radio, they were able to spread the news of what was happening with the Allied forces to both sides of the camp. Well, one day over the radio, they heard that high command in Germany had surrendered to the Allied forces. MacDonald quickly went to the fence, called out for his friend in the Gaelic tongue, explaining what had happened. Silence as that little chaplain ran back into the barracks. And then he announced what had happened. And the whole barracks exploded with excitement and cheers. But still the German guards didn't know, because the message had not gotten to them. So for the next couple days, all the soldiers in both camps, they're waving at the guards. They're waving at the guard dogs. They know. What do they know? The time is short. It is almost, the agony is almost over. So I'm going to put a smile on my face. I'm going to have a good day. Hi, guard. How you doing? How's your family? And it had to be almost silly, but this really happened. 3 days later, German guards got the news. In the night fled, left the gates open. The next day, the Brits and the Americans walked out, free people. Now, did you see the connection? What's the connection? Expectation. They were able to endure 3 more days because they knew how it was all going to turn out. Friend, you can endure. You can wait. You can suffer. Because just another day, maybe not more than 3, your Lord will come. And in the end, you win. And it's going to be okay. Please wait. Don't get in a hurry. Wait, I say, on the Lord. Father in heaven, thank you for the power of this message and of this text. Oh God, help us to wait. Some of us have suffered. Some of us are suffering. At times it looks like there's no end to the suffering. Oh Lord, but you've promised